2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesto. And, Chet, before we get started, I'd like to take a minute and thank our friend Switch, Steve Switkowicz, for stepping in on such short notice last week and covering for me. And great job by both you and Switch. And I have to say to our friend Danny Bevins, the other guy is back, and he's better than ever to talk Eagles. Of course, it's Dallas week, Temple, Flyers, Sixers, Philly, and we also have our trivia question back again tonight as well.
Yeah, Bill, Swit and I had a real good time last week, and kudos to Danny B. for his comment about not missing the other guy, or however he put it. I got a good chuckle out of that one. You are the other guy, and you are back, and hopefully better than ever.
Well, I will tell you, I was driving through the forest in Florida to a job yesterday afternoon, or yesterday morning, and I was listening to your show, and I actually got a laugh from Danny myself about the other guy. So
that was good.
Hopefully Danny's listening, and he'll know that the other guy is back tonight.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
hey,
yeah.
For our listeners, we're going to have no guests tonight, so the call-in lines are going to be open all night to talk anything Philly sports, so feel free to give us a call at 949-477-2855, and we'll talk anything Philly sports tonight. We're wide open. What do you think?
Well, we certainly have plenty of topics. I mean, all the teams are busy right now, either playing or, you know, with news in the case of the Phillies. So, yeah, we're ready for your questions or comments.
Absolutely. So, hey, Ted, I wanted to start out by, you know, like I said, I listened to the show with you and Swit, and as our listeners know, or people that know us know, that we don't share this information before we talk on our show, and we do that on purpose just so we're real when we're talking. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw something at you and Swit, both of you knuckleheads, who are talking 10-6 and 9-7 Eagles, and wonder,
okay,
what in the world are you two thinking about? How can you two guys possibly sit here and think that this Philadelphia Eagles team can beat pretty much anybody?
I'm not saying they can beat pretty much anybody, but they're 3-4, and they haven't played all that great yet, but they have so many winnable games ahead. I mean, they should beat Dallas this weekend. They should beat Miami and Tampa Bay. Neither is going to be easy. I know that. I'm not saying that. But I just got to think they're going to start playing better. And they are finally close to 100% healthy. I mean, almost everybody is back practicing now, including the four linebackers. D'Amico Ryan's still a bit banged up. Kiko's not 100% yet, I'm sure, but they all expect to play. Jason Peters still a big question mark. But, you know, if they're all healthy and they all start playing a little better, which I think they're going to. I mean, I think the bye week will help to rejuvenate them a little bit. And they look at the standings and know that, you know, going into this game Sunday, they could end up in first place. If the Giants lose during the day and the Eagles then win Sunday night, they're in first place. Of course, on the other hand, Eagles lose to Dallas, they're in last place, because they'd both be 3-5, and Dallas would, of course, own the tiebreakers by winning for a second time. So it's a must-win for the Eagles. And like I said, I looked at the schedule, and other than New England, every game is winnable. They're going to drop a couple, but I'm still thinking 9-7 and a division title. Sorry.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think they're going to beat the Cowboys too, and we'll get to our predictions a little bit later on. But, I mean, I think as we have high expectations for this Eagles team, I mean, what makes you think that they're not sitting down in Miami or even Tampa or one of those other teams, Arizona, and looking at the schedule and saying, Philadelphia, that's a winnable game?
Oh,
you know,
I'm sure they're thinking that way.
Because the Eagles have done nothing to really put any fear into anybody.
No.
Is the way I look at it. I just that Monday night game, and you and I have not talked since that Carolina debacle. They were pitiful. They were pitiful.
See, I'm going to disagree with you right there. I don't think they were pitiful. I mean, they were in that game against an undefeated Carolina team. I thought Bradford actually played okay. I'm not saying he was good, but I thought he was okay. They had some chances, but, you know, once again, they just can't put a full game together. I don't think they were pitiful. I don't think they were dreadful. They hung with Carolina until the fourth quarter. You know, Carolina's a pretty good team, as I think, you know, we've seen this year. Cam Newton's not playing lights out. He's playing well, but look at his numbers. They're not that impressive. They're just a good, solid defensive team, and they make the plays when they have to, including the other night against Indianapolis. I'm going to disagree with you about that Carolina game. I thought they played okay, but the problem is they just haven't been able to put together one full four-quarter football game yet this season, and they're going to have to do that a few times if they're going to get to 9-7 like I think they can and like I expect them to.
Well, I guess my thought about pitiful, I guess, is if you're looking at them being an upper echelon team, if you're looking at them being a 500 team who beats the teams they should beat and loses the teams that are better than them, then right. Then I'll agree with what you're saying. They're not playing anywhere. Maybe pitiful was the wrong word, but they're not playing anything like an upper echelon team.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they're an upper echelon team. I'm just saying they should finish 9-7 and win that division. I mean, after Dallas, they have Miami and Tampa Bay, as I already mentioned, and then they have Detroit on Thanksgiving Day. I know Detroit sometimes plays a little better at home on Thanksgiving, but that's another game that you got to win. Let's say you lose one of these four, okay? You still go 3-1 in the month of November. You're suddenly at 6-5 going into December. And then, you know, you go 2-2 in December, you're at 9-7.
I think winning 3 out of 4 is pretty optimistic for a team that's played the way they have. But, hey, we have a caller that wants to chime in already. Let's get them on. Let's see what they got to say.
Sure.
Hello, welcome to the show. Who do we have?
Hi, guys. How you doing? Glad to be able to
Mark?
Talk to you. Yes.
Sounds like Mark. Excellent. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, your Franklin Field reporter's here, okay?
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't try not to miss a Dallas week with you guys because that's always
well,
a favorite.
We appreciate that.
That's always a favorite topic, and that could go for fully breast box for up to your 100th reporting session.
Hmm.
Listen, I was interested today. I heard a question. Since we're coming up on the halfway point of our Eagles season, and the person asked, what are Chip's biggest mistakes as of now? Okay? So it's I don't know what you were discussing for the few minutes before I called, but in the course of your conversation tonight, you may want to throw that out to both of you, all right? Because I thought back, and I said to myself, this is one heck of a perplexing football team this year, all right? And of the 58 years I've watched, it's quite disappointing. They use a new jargon today of self-inflicting wound, okay? Years ago, it was just beat yourself, all right? The other team didn't beat you. You beat yourself by mistakes. And I just caught a little bit of what you're talking about, Bradford, and the Monday night game. Again, it was winnable for us, okay? But, Bill, I kind of agree to one point with you when you say pitiful. It's this team was given a communication feed to all Eagle fans and all of us that really get into it that they were going to be a proven commodity in the NFL this year. And the talent, even though the changes were made, didn't stop Las Vegas or other parties from leading us into another direction. And right now, I kind of feel that, you go to each week saying to yourself, like Jim did mention, they haven't played four quarters in any game this year. You get a spot check here, a spot check here, and you're sitting on your couch getting excited for one quarter, and the next three quarters you're ready to take the duct tape to the pillows so you don't throw them at the TV. that's exactly how it is with me. And I sit back and say, you know what, I have so many people, friends of mine that are, you know, either they're Giants fans or they're not Eagles fans, and I keep telling them, I says, listen, I says, you can't say a word when you score 49 points and lose, all right? This division is, if we want a word pitiful, then the division itself is pitiful. Let's use that, mm-hmm. Jim. I think we got a consensus. We'd all agree with this because by any other stretch of imagination right now, where the Eagles were sitting in the first half of this season, we couldn't even be thinking about any chance of a division championship, you know? One of those teams would have broken loose for sure. And
hey, Mark.
Yes.
While it's fresh in my mind, let me answer your first question, the first topic that you raised.
Sure.
The biggest mistakes of Chip Kelly, three of them immediately come to mind. They're all from the offseason, okay? One was not giving Jeremy Maclin the extra $1 or $2 million that would have kept him in Philadelphia.
I agree.
The second thing is not drafting an offensive lineman since Lane Johnson when he first got here in 2013. There were no O-linemen picked the last two drafts by this Birds team. And number three, Sam Bradford. I didn't like it when they made the trade, and I don't like it now. So there's my three right there.
Yes, the Maclin, definitely. I'm aboard with that one 100%. I came to light because I took a lot of grief on Facebook about my support of Evan Mathis. And Evan Mathis, to me, he just still didn't give up on an all-pro lineman and not have anybody there as a replacement, you know, at all.
I agree there, too.
And especially with getting Bradford under a health condition, you definitely want to have a healthy line, and you're giving up on all pro. Of course, now he's with Denver. Now, doesn't say he's you know, doing all the raves in Denver, but they're 7-0, aren't they? And it's just a matter that, you know, I'm glad I took the heat, but I would have backed that move all along. That was a bad one. And I have really a problem. I know we talked buzz back and forth with a lot of Facebook friends, and we can go on and on about Chip Kelly the coach or Chip Kelly the general manager. I've just never been one that likes a person in the same role, especially if they're only coming into the pros for 2 years. All right, now you know I'm not. Lurie's the one that really owns the team and makes the final decisions. And I'm sure there's a lot of speculation how it all comes about. But I think he was grasping a lot here trying to take both roles because it's just – coaching is just – and Bill, you and I know this. Coaching is just one venture altogether, all right? That's difficult enough. Then going to a – I mean, you could take high school or college and differentiate it to the professional level. And the professional friends I know tell me a lot of this stuff. I mean, I can't even imagine the details you have to go through properly as a general manager in the NFL today, all right? I just think he's taking too much on. I really do.
Well,
his ego has got him.
Yeah, I think, Mark, my thought on that is, for one, I mean, Jeffrey Lurie's only got two guys to go by, Andy Reid and Chip Kelly. And it really surprised me, you know, who knows about the internal power struggles within the organization. We only get to read about that from the outside. But,
yeah, it's all speculation.
You know, but we know in Andy Reid's case, it didn't work. And Andy was the first one to say the biggest mistake he ever made in Philadelphia was to take on the GM spot because it took away from his coaching. You know, and then in Chip Kelly's case, here's a guy that's never even been in the NFL. You're not even sure that this guy can evaluate talent. And then you've given him the whole entire shooting match. And that's why we're sitting here having these conversations, you know, about off-season moves, because we don't even know that the guy, you know, can evaluate talent yet.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that, for me, that's the biggest problem organizational-wise.
Well, I think it was a really constructive question that came out the halfway point of the season. And I just, you know, I thought would get your feedback on this because a lot of people have their opinions to that point. Now look, it's not impossible that this team can get on a roll because there's a lot of bad NFL teams out there this year, all right? But,
right.
I hate Dallas. More than probably
me too.
Two guys put together, all right? I literally just, you know, and I'm going to be sitting back Sunday night saying to myself, which team is more desperate for a win right now? And that's something I've always said in trying to judge something, to figure out who's going to perform best and whatever. Dallas has lost five games. Seattle's not Seattle of old, but you know they could have won that game without Tony Romo. If Bradford throws some picks Sunday night, I don't look. If we really want revenge from the game that they had here, the embarrassment they had here early in the season, then I'm going to say, yeah, this is the Eagles game to be had. All right, and quite frankly, I think they're a better team without, obviously, Romo and not only Dez Bryant right now, but I don't like the smell of this one. my buddy Ray Dittinger heard him comment that, you know, Dallas, it's a real elimination game. Philadelphia could survive, technically, even though they'd be our third division loss. But, you know, that's the thing that scares me, you know, for Sunday night. I go back to last November, our Thanksgiving, and Eagles' record since then has been 4-7 since they walloped Dallas, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good sign. It's certainly not a good sign.
Nope.
That leads it to that end. But anyway, the other question I'll throw to you, Would you have considered, or would you consider, a Kaepernick future with the Eagles? All right.
Oh, I knew that was going to come up.
I was going to throw that with you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the last one, I'll switch off of the Eagles. So you have that in store, Jim and Bill. You can throw that back on the radio. But tell me your view right now how our baseball team is making the changes. Do you like what they're doing right now? Do you feel more positive coming away from a 99 loss season? I think, you know, you're not going to have major changes. But for me personally, I think the future is going to get brighter there. I know last time I talked to you, I had Kevin Cooney on, and I asked him who he felt the first. I see the Phillies making a move in a couple of years that their management and their staff are not as far away as a lot of people, I think, can have it. And it's possible they can be a very competitive team again within 2 or 3 years, which is good for all of us right now, because in Philadelphia, without having a great Temple game the other Saturday night, there's really not much to watch that you get excited about. Hmm. All right?
Right.
Take it, Bill.
Mark. Well, hey, Mark. We're gonna have to move on right quick, but we will answer your question. But we're gonna have to cut you off right at the moment. Okay, my friend.
Oh, I know you got a lot to discuss and everything. And it's
great
to talk to both of you.
Actually, great questions you brought up as far as the biggest mistake in this Philly thing. Great, great questions. We appreciate you calling,
yep.
And we will answer them right now.
All right, buddy.
Thank you, Mark.
Good talking to you. All
okay.
right.
All right.
See you. Have a nice
Mark.
Turkey day. Bye-bye now.
You got it.
You
thanks, Mark.
Hey, Chet. Mark
yep.
brings up a great point. Let's jump over to the Phillies real quick, but then we'll come back and talk a little bit more Eagles. But, hey, mm-hmm. to his point about the Phillies, you know, I think they're still a few years away with what they've done, but I like what they've done. And you and Swit talked a little bit about this last week with some of these young arms and young players. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the new general manager, you know, he's a young guy with new ideas and you know, the whole stat thing, sabermetrics and all that stuff. So that remains to be seen. But I think the moves that they made and the prospects that they've picked up, and some of them are maybe more than prospects, I like what's going on.
I do, too. I really like what Amaro did, in fact, you know, at the trade deadline in July. Got a lot of good prospects. And then we have Nola and Ikoff, who both look like they're going to be quality pitchers. I'm not going to say either one of them is going to be, you know, a bona fide stud, top-of-the-rotation guy, but they both look like they're going to be solid major league pitchers. And then, of course, you'll add somebody next year, a more mid-level starter to that staff. They're not going to turn it around next year, as you indicated, but I think, you know, by 2017, they'll certainly be competitive once again and hopefully be contenders in 2018. So that's, you know, 3 years from now, and boy, that'd be great to see. They do have a lot of guys in AA and some in AAA now, and, you know, Franco, of course, and, you know, some of the other guys already on the roster. I think the future is bright, and I like this guy that they hired. I like Andy McPhail also. And we'll learn more about the new GM in the coming days. He's going to do some more interviews. But yeah, from what I've heard, he's knows his stuff with the technology and the sabermetrics and all of that. So we shall see. But so far, I like what I see.
Me too. Hey, and you know, as far as Nola and Ikoff, I'm not sure that those guys don't have top-of-the-rotation stuff. I mean, they're young kids. To me, with a ton of upside if they stay healthy, I like them. I like the both of them, and I think they got a chance to be around here for a real long time. Maybe, you know, maybe not one and two next year yet, like you're saying, bring in another guy. But I see a great future for those guys if they treat them right, don't overuse them, you know, at young ages and burn them out, and just bring them along so that they're peaking when the team is ready to peak.
And then in a year or two, don't the Phillies get a whole lot more money from the TV deal? So hopefully we'll be able to spend some more. Yep.
Yes, absolutely they do. Well, hey, let's jump back over to the Eagles right quick while we still have a minute. And I wanted to tell you, I'm looking at a recent current as of the 3rd injury report, and it has Ryan Matthews dealing with a groin injury and questionable to play Sunday against the Cowboys.
Yeah, and you know – Let me respond to that. I saw Philly Sports Talk today, and Michael Barkan said, that's because Chip Kelly said he had a groin problem. So they're just saying that to, you know, cover for Chip, and that may be the case. Who knows? Because I haven't heard Matthew say anything about it yet. So I don't know if they told him to just kind of, you know, lay low about it or what. But, yeah, he's listed with a groin problem, but I'm not so sure. And I'm pretty sure he's going to play, and I want to see how they divvy up the carries. I know Murray's going back to Dallas, and he's going to be all pumped up. So, you know, hopefully he'll have a big game, but I do want to see Ryan Matthews get more involved in that offense.
Hey, I have one more Eagles question for you, and then we're going to move on to talk a little Temple right quick. But I wanted to ask you, you know, you were, I'm not going to call you a Kool-Aid drinker, but you were cautiously optimistic that this was going to be a pretty good club. And I was a little further down than you. Of course, there were many that were saying 13-3 and this and that. But what do you think about the fans' reaction as we sit here going into week 8, that bandwagon, that Chip Kelly bandwagon has dismantled?
Yeah, there's a lot of room on the bandwagon now, that's for sure. Part of the problem is they just haven't played a good game yet, and they're 3-4. And you know what's really weird? They're playing Dallas this week, and it just doesn't have the typical buzz that an Eagles-Cowboys week normally does. And that, of course, is because of the way the Eagles are playing and the fact that Dallas is 2-5 and has lost 5 in a row, doesn't have Tony Romo. So it's understandable. But, boy, you know, most times, twice a year, you get so pumped up for that Eagles-Cowboys game. Just not feeling it this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, I have one last thing, one last question for you with in regards to the Cowboys game this week. Is anybody going to block Sean Lee this week?
Hmm. Boy, I hope so.
If I remember right, he had 14 tackles against the Eagles last week or last time, and we never blocked him. Do you think it's possible that let's just for fun, let's go over under 12 tackles? What do you think?
I'm going to I'm going to say right around 12. So I would go with the under just because I'm a semi-optimist. So I would say, you know, maybe 10 or 11, but he's going to be close to 12. You know that. And one key is going to be Jason Peters, getting him healthy. He's never going to be healthy, but just keeping Jason Peters on the field for maybe a whole game for a change. Boy, they need him on that line, I'll tell you, because without Peters in there, they go from a mediocre line to a subpar line.
Oh, it's a whole different show. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, hey, while we're talking football, let's move on. And I got to say, I'm so happy for the Temple Owls and for the city of Philadelphia last Saturday when game day was in town. It was really, really cool. Game day was cool. And I always have said that there's no such thing as moral victories, but what an effort by the Owls. I mean, they needed just one more stop. And they had Notre Dame on the ropes for all but 2 minutes of that game, and they just couldn't get that one last stop. But, man, what a great game by the Owls. What a great environment at Lincoln Financial Field. And the game day situation was really cool. And a lot of really cool creative posters made by the Philly faithful for game day.
You know, I think I withheld this last week when Swit and I talked about it, but part of me feared a blowout of Temple by the Fighting Irish. Sorry, my many Temple peeps, but it certainly didn't go that way. It was a great game. The Owls actually took the lead, of course, with 4.5 minutes or so left. The link was rocking, but as you noted, they just couldn't get that one more stop that they needed. And, of course, it was a Philly guy, Fuller, who caught the game-winning touchdown. Still, a tremendous game, tremendous atmosphere. Right from the morning with the ESPN College Football Game Day crew down by Independence Mall, right through the final horn. Boy, what a day and night in Philly. It was great to see.
Yes, it was. And, I kept thinking about when there was a year, I think it was 1991, when Penn State went out to Notre Dame and played in the snow, and Penn State ended up beating them. It was either at the gun or in overtime. I don't even think it was overtime then. But I think they beat them at the gun with a field goal. But there's an old story about Joe Paterno taking his team out there and the whole mystique of Notre Dame and this and that. And Joe made the comment, and he said that it's up to his players. He said, unless Rockne comes up out of this ground, we have just as good a tradition as they have here at Notre Dame. Hmm. And I always thought that was a cool thing from a coach's standpoint. And I think, you know, so many people want to get caught up in the history of Notre Dame to think that Temple didn't have a chance. But Temple lined up toe-to-toe with that tradition and was with them for, you know, all but 2 minutes of that game. And really, really happy for the Owls and for Matt Rhule. Nothing but upside for those guys.
Yeah, that was fun to watch.
It was. And I think we're going to probably talk a little bit about that maybe in our parting shots. You have one and I have one, but we don't, and we know they're both about Temple, but we don't know what we're each going to say. So maybe
well,
we'll
it
cover
sounds
a
like
more
yours is going to be more about Temple. Yours is going to be more about Temple than mine. I can tell from, you know, what you just said right there. And by the way, even if there's a bit of a letdown now after all the Notre Dame hype, the Owls should still be able to handle a 1-7 SMU squad Friday night. So I'm looking for another big win for the Owls this weekend.
Right, and they still have Memphis to play, and then they have South Florida coming up. So, yeah.
Yep.
But, hey, great win for the Owls. Keep winning. No, can't have any letdowns. And, if they sit out there 10-2, 11-1, I don't know they're playing on New Year's Day, but they're going to get a good bowl, and hopefully a good bowl brings more money. And that's a recruiting bonanza. Last Saturday was a recruiting bonanza for Temple, I think.
It was indeed, yeah. And speaking of recruiting, you know who else is going to get recruited? That's going to be Matt Rhule after this season. He's going to get some job offers for sure.
Absolutely, and that will be part of my parting shot if we get to it.
Aha.
So I will hold my comment on that for the moment. And hopefully we stay on schedule and I'll get an opportunity to say my piece.
And we have to talk about Kaepernick, too.
Yes. Well, let's talk about Kaepernick. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about Kaepernick because he's been, you know, benched now out in San Fran. A lot of people say he'd be a great fit for this Eagles team. You know, if we were getting the Kaepernick of 2011 or 2012 or whatever it was, yeah. But, boy, that guy has just gone downhill in the couple of years since then. Even though he's got great mobility – he gets sacked a lot. He's one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the league on a percentage basis. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's, you know, his line out there or if he's just making poor decisions, holds on to the ball too long or what. But I'm not in favor of bringing him here right now. Maybe in the off season it'd be worth a gamble, depending on, of course, what happens with Bradford. But if you bring him in now via a trade, A, you're going to tick off both Bradford and Sanchez, unless, of course, one of those guys was part of the trade, which I don't think would be the case. And B, he wouldn't be ready to play right away with the Eagles anyway. He would have to, you know, learn the system, get used to the guys, all of that. So I don't think bringing him in via a trade right now midseason would be worth it. Maybe consider it in the off season if you think you can, you know, make him a reclamation project and get him right again. But I wouldn't do it right now.
Well, I'm going to agree with you, and I guess maybe not for all the reasons you said, but what I would wonder is what happened. What's going on behind the scene that us people don't know? Did the league catch up to him, or there something personal? He doesn't work hard enough. He, you know, whatever. I mean, there's some reason that his play has deteriorated like it has, and to the point that he went from, you know, what do you want to call him, a million-dollar baby, to now a guy they want to get rid of. Something's not right. Maybe he got his money, and now he doesn't put in the time. You know, who knows what it is, but I'm with you. I wouldn't do it, but probably for a different reason. I would stay with what I have until I was sure that that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, and it's not like he got old. He's still only 28. He just turned 28 yesterday. So, I mean, that shouldn't be the problem. He's still mobile. He's healthy. So, yeah, I don't know. There's something going on there, though, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, hey, let's move on, talk about our trivia question. I do have one more football thing I want to talk to you about, but let's get our trivia question out there. With the first correct answer winning two autographed 8x10 color photos of upcoming Flyers superstar Scott Laughton, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that calls in and correctly answers our trivia question. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question, 929-477-2855. And, Chet, I'm going to make you think a little bit tonight, okay? I think you're going to know this answer, but you're going to have to think a little bit. This isn't a 2015 Eagles question, so here you go. Again, this is to win the two autographed Scott Laughton Flyers 8x10 color pictures courtesy of Carl's Cards. LeSean McCoy led the Eagles in rushing the last six seasons, and Brian Westbrook led the team for the six seasons before that. So that's 12 seasons. Who led the team in rushing four of the 5 years before that? And I'll even give you the years, 98, 99, 01, and 02.
Easy one. Bill. LeSean, we should have a winner there.
All right. LeSean McCoy led the Eagles in rushing the last six seasons. The Brian Westbrook led for the six seasons before that. Who led the team in rushing for the 5 years before that? 98, 99, 01, and 02. Again, our shopforkisses.org phone number to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. All right, Chet, let's take a break right quick. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Hey, Chet, before we get to the jump over to the Flyers, I wanted to throw one more football thing at you, and it doesn't necessarily have directly to do with the Eagles, but what do you think about the debacle that took place in the Miami Hurricanes instant replay situation and how it relates to all sports? And, you know, tie it to whatever sport you want, but what is your overall opinion of instant replay to begin with?
Now, this was the eight lateral finish?
This was the eight lateral, three blocks in the back and a knee down that got the flag picked up after review and gave a touchdown to end the game and win the game.
Okay, first of all, I like instant replay for the most part because I want to get the call right. The problem is they still got the call wrong. That's the most ridiculous thing. So, you know, if you're going to take 8 or 9 minutes to review something, please get the call right. And there's no excuse for having to review something that long. Put a time limit on it. If you can't figure it out by 3 o'clock or by 3 minutes, rather, you go with what the call on the field was. Okay, you're supposed to, you know, do it in a reasonable amount of time. They didn't, and they still blew it. So I like instant replay, but I want them to get it right when they use it.
Well, do you think there was a lot of talk early on Sunday morning after that all happened late on Saturday night, changing the outcome of the game after the game. And I'm going to tell you, I'm 100% against that. When you walk off the field, the game's over. But there was a lot of talk about that was such a blown call, and it was the last play of the game, that as soon as that knee went down, the game was over. And I don't believe in that, you know, because there's other plays in the game. Actually, the touchdown in that game to put Duke ahead with 6 seconds to go, I never thought the guy crossed the goal line to score that touchdown. So you can't do that, but just the whole instant replay thing, you know, how many games do you watch and they do a replay and you watch it and you listen to the announcers and everybody says, oh, the call's going to go this way. And they turn around and they don't do it. And it's obvious of what the call is and they don't make that call.
I think it was Chris Collinsworth or Troy Aikman this past week who said, watching one of the replays, I don't know what a catch is anymore, because it changes from week to week, it seems, you know, when they review something. 1 week, they call it one way. The next week, the exact opposite. So who the heck knows? I don't know.
Yep. Yep. Well, that was Collinsworth. I find it interesting because I think baseball and all the stuff that's going on there and want to do instant replay and this box and the strike zone on TV and all this stuff, it's just a mess to me. It's a big old train wreck.
Yeah. So I like replay, but you got to get the call right when you use it.
You're right. All right. So, hey, let's jump over. Let's talk a little Flyers of what in the world has happened all of a sudden. After a pretty nice start, they've lost five in a row. They're currently in 14th place in the East out of 16 teams, and they've scored just 24 goals in 12 games. And I know you had a concern about Steve Mason in the net, but you know what, Chet? It wouldn't matter if you were in the net, my friend, if you're not going to score goals.
Well, Bill, the lack of firepower was one of my many fears going into this season. The new coach, Dave Haxtell, we didn't know what to expect from him, but there's just not a whole lot of offense there on that team, and their record is now 4-6-2 as a result. One guy who's really struggling, and Swit mentioned this last week, is Jake Voracek. Bill, you and I have as many goals as Jake through 12 games. That would be zero. Just 4 assists for Voracek this season. Wayne Simmonds has just 1 goal. For goodness sake, defenseman Mark Streit has 3 goals. Now, I know it's only November, but they got to get it going, or they're just, you know, going to be out of it real soon. Because right now there are just 2 teams in the Eastern Conference, as you alluded to, with fewer points. That's Columbus and Toronto. So that means the Orange and Black really have some work to do if they want to move up and try to sneak into the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you know, they have 4 power play goals on the season. I mean, that's it. 12 games, 4 power play goals. Everybody was concerned about the defense, you know, improving the blue line, and doggone, I mean, this offense is just atrocious.
I remember saying to you a couple of weeks ago that they're going to have to win a lot of 2-1 and 3-2 games this season. Well, they're not doing it. They lost last night, 3-2, I believe it was. So, I mean, the goaltending hasn't been bad outside of that one game, the second game of the season, I believe it was, when Mason got shelled. But they're just not scoring. That's got to change.
Right, right. I'm with you, and I don't know. I don't know what you do about it. I mean, you know, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, maybe you bring those young kids up, and let's get it on with the young guys, and let's see if somebody can start turning the light on, because these guys, you know, and we talked about this many weeks ago, is the whole R.J. Umberger and guys like that, and even having them on the team. Let's bring up some guys and see where it goes.
I'm with you.
I'm with you, too. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do. And then you're also Michael Raffle. You know, he got banged up a little bit in that whatever happened to him up there in that game in New York. But 1 point.
Yeah, he did.
One point in 12 games, you know.
He's one of many disappointments.
Yeah. And, I mean, you could probably go – Mark Streit's leading the team in points.
I know. How about that? I know it's only November, but you know the games count just as much in November as they do in March. So you got to win some of these.
Yeah. And I'll tell you right now. I mean, we're only 12 games in, but I'm disappointed. I really thought that they had an opportunity to be fighting for that last playoff spot, and that's sure not coming out that way here. In the last week, anyway, or in the last five games, they've just been pretty fast.
Yes, they have.
All right. Well, hey, partner, you and Swift had a nice debate going on the 76ers last week, with your opinions pretty much being on opposite ends of the spectrum. And that question, or that discussion, made me think, and I wanted to ask you this. As a 76er fan, would you rather have the team being in that seventh or eighth spot, just making the playoffs, or the ninth or tenth spot, just being outside the playoffs every year with not a whole lot of chance to get better, picking in those 7, 8, 9, 10 spots? Or would you rather have the situation that we have now, where you're going to just pretty well stink for a handful of years and hopefully get better?
Well, believe it or not, I like what's happening right now. I will continue to trust the process, the Hinkie process, for one more season, okay? I'm giving them one more year, but I'm really, really expecting to see some big positive developments next year. And Swit and I talked about this. You know, next spring they hopefully will have some quality draft picks. They could have 3 or 4 first-round picks. Hopefully they'll get lucky with at least a couple of those. Dario Saric says he's coming over next year, so hopefully he will be, you know, a decent player that we're told he is. And maybe, just maybe, Joel Embiid. So, you know, hopefully things will really start moving in the right direction next year. Now, as for this season, let's be honest. No one is surprised at the 0-3 start by the Sixers, game 4 tonight in Milwaukee. They have a slew of new faces. They're extremely young. No one's older than 24. And they still have several guys out with injuries. In fact, we just learned that Robert Covington re-injured his knee and did not make the trip to the Midwest. So he came back, played one game, and he's hurt again. Now, the positives. Jahlil Okafor seems to be coming along nicely despite getting double-teamed right from the get-go. He's averaging 20 points through the first three games. Nerlens Noel has been solid and looks like he's improved both his rebounding and his shooting touch. I think he's averaging 12 points and 10 boards, up from 10 and 8 last year. So I think he's going to continue to get better. I think Nick Stauskas is going to get better as he continues to play more. And, you know, we're going to get some other guys back over the next month or two, so that will help. And I think by January, the team is going to be a whole lot better and start winning some games. They're not going to compete for a playoff spot this year, but they're not going to look as bad as they did the first couple of games. And they actually played pretty decent against Cleveland in Game 3. So better days are ahead, Bill.
I agree. And, you know, I just hate to stink so bad. And we talked about this last year, and I think you're going to see the same thing this year. I think you're going to see the effort from the players. I don't think that's going to be a problem. And they played hard last year. They just weren't good enough. And I hope we see that again this year. And even if they don't win a lot of games, that you see a lot of improvement. And that's really what I'm hoping for. Or as Switz says, this thing busts. You know, and then you got real trouble, because you're probably 10 years from fixing it after that.
Right. You got it.
So, we will see. Hey, the World Series, it's over, and the Kansas City Royals rolled over the Mets, Chet, 4-1, in what really, for what wasn't bad playoffs, did not turn out to be a very eventful World Series.
And yet another faulty prediction by yours truly. I just figured the Mets had too much quality starting pitching and would ultimately win the series. But I was way off on that one, and I didn't give Kansas City enough credit. The Royals do have a bunch of solid players, and they came from behind in a couple of those wins. And as a longtime Phillies fan, I must admit this, that when I was watching Sunday night and Matt Harvey convinced manager Terry Collins to keep him in for the ninth inning with a 2-0 lead, even though he was over 100 pitches, I was hoping the decision would blow up in their faces, which of course it did. I'm evil, I admit it. I liked seeing that happen.
Well, and you know what? You can't blame the A's for wanting the ball. You know,
I would have done the same thing. I would have kept him in too.
Yeah, that's right. If that was Hamels pitching for us, when they took Hamels out in the game that the Rangers lost, what was the first thing we said? Why'd you take him out?
Exactly.
Right. So I'm with you there. And you know, interestingly enough, it was about 4 years ago now. I was doing a lot of work out in Kansas City and went to Royals games a lot, actually, because I was staying about 5 minutes from the stadium. There wasn't 10,000 people in there, you know, and at the same time, I was also doing a lot of work in Pittsburgh, and I was going to Pirates games, and there wasn't 10,000 people in those stadiums.
Right.
And here we are 4 years later, the Pirates are good. The Kansas City Royals are world champions, and it can happen pretty quick if you get the right bunch of people, and they accumulated a pretty good team, actually, they put together.
Yeah, so that's what we're hoping for here in a few years in Philly.
Absolutely. And, hey, as an interesting sidebar fact I wanted to throw at you, my son Mike was a baseball player in high school along with all my kids, but he played against the Royals' Wade Davis in high school throughout his high school career and actually in Little League as well, and played on a showcase all-star team with him, and that also featured a couple of guys you might know, one Andrew McCutchen and Jordan Schaefer. And Davis pitched in 3 World Series games. He threw 4 innings and allowed no runs and actually pitched the last inning and got the last out on strikeout looking. So, Wade is from right there in Lake Wales, Florida, where, the county where we grew up, or my kids grew up, and I coached and all that. And so I had a little rooting interest for Wade and with that, the Kansas City Royals, and, of course, because they were playing against the Mets.
Yep. Easy to root against the Mets. That's never a problem.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, good stuff. Well, hey, let's get on to our weekly winner of Philly Press Box Radio Pick'em Pool. And this week, Chet, Terry House. Terry won 13 of 14 games this week, only losing the Tampa Bay upset of Atlanta. He had them all right, and I wish I could say I had about half of them right. But 4 others finished with 12 wins for the week. And in the meantime, that giant thud you heard all around the Delaware Valley was the season leader, Carl Henderson, having, let's say, not so good a week. Watching his season lead go from 4 games to 1 game. And Terry House and Ed Chambers are just a game back. And, there are 9 players within 5 games of first place, another 13 players within 10 games. It's only midseason. So, with all the details out of the way, let's welcome the man that knows more about college football than anybody I know, Terry House. And, Terry, it's time for you to brag a little bit on your great week this week.
You know, Bill, I surprised myself a little bit. As you pointed out, I'm definitely more of a college football aficionado. But I made some good guesses, I would say, on the NFL this past week.
Congratulations.
Such a humble man as you sit 1 game out of first place after 8 weeks. I'm thinking you've been making a lot of good guesses.
Quite a few, my friend, quite a few. Yes, this is true. But I've had a chance to watch a little bit more of the NFL, so starting to get a better feel for what's going on. But, the NFL, it's one of those things where, you know, each week every matchup is different, every game is different. Forget about the week before, you know, the old cliche, any given Sunday. It definitely rings true, especially in a league, filled with lots of parity and, you know, there's very few great teams outside of, you know, maybe the Patriots. And I felt like the Packers were a pretty good football team, but they obviously didn't look very good Sunday night.
Terry, what convinced you to pick Denver over Green Bay? How do you decide to go with the Broncos?
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually I thought Denver's defense would be the difference, and obviously they were. You know, for any NFL team, you know, the ability to get after the quarterback, to get them off their spots, to make them feel uncomfortable, to, you know, negate timing and, you know, break a team of rhythm, especially a team like the Packers who has struggled to run the football. You know, they definitely haven't been clicking on all cylinders, and you go on the road and play a team like that, that can just get after you. And, you know, they made things difficult for Aaron Rodgers, who I think is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And, you know, by the time he's done playing this game, could be one of the best ever. And he obviously had a very difficult time. And their receivers aren't separating well. You know, they're not getting a lot of explosive plays. They've had a lot of injuries. So, I mean, for me, I looked at it, and it just looked like the right pick just based on, you know, a lot of what we've seen the last couple of weeks. And look, Denver, they haven't played great on offense. They've had some injuries as well. But, I mean, Peyton Manning, you have to figure that he was going to break the string of, you know, playing, you know, less than Peyton Manning-like. So, for me, that wasn't really a difficult pick.
Well, hey, Terry, why we have you, give us a quick pick if you want to share, since you're right up in the lead. Eagles-Cowboys Sunday, who you like?
Well, I like the Eagles. I mean, I do. I think coming off a bye, I think that they'll – you know, be able to settle down a little bit. You know, I'm sure that Chip told his guys to take some time away from the game and just, you know, not think about things and you know, let things go. And, you know, I think it just comes down to Bradford and his ability to be comfortable. But I like the Eagles in this game. I think, you know, with the Cowboys dealing with so many injuries and a little bit of turmoil there within the locker room, you know, a bunch of characters, you know, I think the Eagles will – I think they'll play well. I think they'll beat the Cowboys there. But I do want to see a little bit more consistency from that quarterback position, which I'm sure a lot of you guys want to as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Terry. Well, we hate to cut you short, but we're a little behind. But congratulations on the win, and I'm going to tell you what I tell everybody every week. We hope to not hear from you again.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks so much. Have a great rest of the show.
Take care, Terry.
All right. Thanks, Terry. Hey, Chad, I didn't want to say this because Big John, I know Big John Roberts is listening, but Terry is a crazy, crazy diehard USC Trojan fan. So,
just like Big John Roberts.
Yeah, just to the point that he actually dresses his daughters up as USC cheerleaders for Halloween. That's just
wow.
Wrong with that.
That is a diehard.
That is. Well, hey, let's update the upcoming signings list of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, and as we're getting close to the end of the year, I know he's got some more things planned, but right now the Eagles' Josh Huff and Cedric Thornton will be in the store November the 19th. And as we said before, it's never too early to start Christmas shopping, and there's no place better to do it than Carl's Cards if you want Philadelphia sports memorabilia. You can get more information on his website at carlscards.com, on Twitter at Carl's Cards, or by calling the store at 610-789-4996.
Let's hope Huff doesn't fumble that appearance, buddy.
What's that?
I said, let's hope Josh Huff doesn't fumble that appearance.
Well, that's right. That's right. Right. Hit him right in the hands and drop it. Hey, let's talk fearless predictions. It's Eagles Cowboys week. You're up.
Well, hey, Terry is coming off a great week. He likes the Eagles, so I'm going to have to go with him, but here's why. It's two teams that desperately need a win. Eagles are finally getting close to being healthy again, thanks to the bye in part. Dallas, still without Tony Romo. It's a series where the visiting team has done better than the home team in recent meetings, and that continues here. Eagles 27, Cowboys 17.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go Eagles as well. I wanted to think that the Eagles were going to route these guys, but I think Dallas is still going to play pretty good defense. I don't think they're going to block Sean Lee. Hopefully the Eagles have adjusted to what the Dallas defense did to them last time, but I just don't think Dallas can muster up enough offense with all the bandages they have to possibly win this game. So I'm going in a close one. I think it's going to be a close one. I'm going 21-17 Eagles.
Hey, do you know what the line is on that game, by the way?
I do not.
I do not either. I haven't looked at it. I was just curious, so. I don't know.
Okay.
But I'm picking the Eagles by 10.
I will see if I can dig that up while you, Mr. Tesco, if you have a parting shot. Go ahead.
All right. Bill, we were all focused on that Temple-Notre Dame game Saturday night, and rightly so. Great showcase for TU and the city of Philadelphia. But earlier in the day, I got to see a good chunk of Penn State's game, a 39-0 shellacking of Illinois. The Nittany Lions haven't had a great year despite a misleading 7-2 record. They just haven't looked that impressive. Well, they looked real good on Saturday, and Christian Hackenberg looked like the quarterback we expected him to be. So it was nice to see, and I'm hoping to see more of that on the road against a tougher opponent this week, 6-2 Northwestern. Roar, Lions, roar.
Hey, I'm with you. Good game. And you know, I'll throw this out there if you didn't know this. The Illinois head coach is an interim coach, Bill Cupid, from Sharon Hill, Pennsylvania. And I grew up, Bill was a little older than me, but I played against all of his brothers and knew the family, and they're from my wife's hometown. And I actually played in his little summer basketball league with Bill Cupid years ago. And
how about that?
He's a local guy, so wishing him well. And he's done a nice job out there, and hopefully that interim tag gets lifted and he gets that job full time. That'd be good.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Hey, Eagles by 2.5.
Okay. I was going to guess about 3 points in favor of the Eagles. So, yeah, I like it.
Yep. Okay. Hey, my parting shot is going to be towards Temple and Matt Rhule and what's going on up there. And my point is that Temple needs to do what it needs to do to sign Matt Rhule to a long-term contract, lock him in. You know, some years ago they had Al Golden, and Al got that thing straightened out and got it going in the right direction, but it was clearly, I think, pretty much known that that was a stepping stone for Al. Then they went to Steve Adazio, which was a disaster, and actually took what Al had built and kind of tore it back down a little bit. They went back to Matt Rhule, who was on Al Golden's staff, and Matt has gotten that thing going. They cannot let this thing slip. Ride the momentum, sign Matt Rhule, get him into a long-term deal, and let's build this thing. And that leads to the whole stadium situation. I'm not sure if it's a great thing to have a stadium in North Philadelphia. I'm not sure that you can get people up there to go to games on a regular basis. So that's its whole different issue. But I think while the iron's hot and people are interested in what you're doing and willing to spend a little money to go out and watch your football team, let's invest in it and let's build Temple into a Division I football power and keep it going and not be a one-hit wonder. So
I'm with you. And by the way, how'd that move by Al Golden work out?
Well, Al didn't make it through his contract, but Al is about $20 million richer than when he was at Temple.
Yeah, I guess it worked out financially.
it's not.
Now he's walking
loss,
the unemployment line, though.
Yeah,
good for Al.
Well, I'm not sure that line goes very far when you got that kind of cash.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Chip, before we get away, because we're really running out of time, I want to say to you, my friend, a little ahead of time, happy birthday on Friday, since we won't see you until your birthday has passed.
Yes, thank you very much. Another year older. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate that.
You didn't know that I knew.
For my gift, I would like an Eagles victory Sunday night. Thank you very much.
There you go. We'll order that up. All right. So as we get to the top of the hour, let's thank Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, shopforkisses.org. The online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, November 11th at 7 p.m. You can listen to our Facebook page or on the Internet, and now on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.